good, everybody, and welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily. It's Monday, June 24th, 2019. I'm Andrea Renee, joined by the best hair in the business, Fran Mirabella III.
Ahoy, hoy. What is up? Good morning, Andrea. How are
you? Happy Monday, Fran.
Happy Monday, yeah. I was feeling a little tired until I saw you, and you just woke me up.
I've got all kinds of energy today. I had a nice, relaxing weekend after we both did some streaming. We didn't stream together, though. We've never streamed together.
Yeah,
well,
we need to.
Maybe one time during the division?
Yep.
Yeah, we crossed paths for
it
a while.
It didn't go well,
didn't we?
It didn't go well. Whose fault is that, Kevin?
Yours.
Yeah. You know, Gary Whitta is streaming now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So be sure to, I think it's just / Gary Whitta, but he's been out there and he's doing like just chatting. And I think he's talking about like his experience in life. And we know he has a lot of it.
Yes, so. He does. He's a very entertaining person, that Gary Whitta. In case you didn't realize, this, of course, is Kinda Funny Games Daily, your source for nerdy video game news in the morning, each and every weekday, right here at twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We ask you guys to help keep us honest by going to kindafunny.com/you're wrong to let us know what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody listening on podcast services around the globe. And, of course, watching at youtube.com/kindafunnygames. If you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, that'd help us out a lot. We'd really appreciate it. It would make us feel good and give some warm and fuzzies inside. Mm-hmm. So maybe you want to go a step further though and become one of our awesome patrons at patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where you can get involved with the show by sending in your questions, your squad up requests, and you know, anything else that your little heart desires. We do have a little bit of housekeeping today. We have some exciting news. Well, if you've been watching the crew on social media, you may have already heard the news. It's the project you've been waiting one whole year for. This Sunday, the video version of Kinda Funny Prom goes live on YouTube at youtube.com/kindafunny. Come see Smash Mouth shock the world, Greg Mary's two Kinda Funny best friends, and Tim and Gia crowd surf. Subscribe right now.
Sunday.
Perfect. It was actually a ton of fun, and if you guys weren't there, which I'm not surprised, the tickets sold out like super quickly, and the venue wasn't super large, so not a lot of best friends were able to make it into prom, but now you can experience what happened at Kinda Funny Prom for yourself.
Mean the Oasis thing is on there, Kevin?
Yeah, I imagine.
What Oasis thing?
I feel bad for, what was the couple's name that got engaged on there?
Just say the married couple.
Well, the couple that is now married, who I know, and I'm sorry, I'm forget, it's Eric and some other thing, but
I don't think it's Eric.
It's
wrong.
Not. I got it wrong. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Names too.
This is a kindafunny.com/you're wrong.
Why did I bring it up? I was going to get it wrong. Anyway, at the beginning, they asked me to just like play like a little Oasis opening to.
It sounds.
It's Monday, everybody.
It was phenomenal.
So,
you did a great job.
I can't remember the name of the song. That's kind of Monday.
In case that isn't exciting for you, how about I get to sing on stage with Smash Mouth?
Oh, you did. That's
right.
Yes,
it was.
That's amazing.
It was a really fun, amazing moment.
The lives we live.
It was great. So this Sunday, keep an eye out for that. Plus, we want to say thank you to our fantastic Patreon producers, Daniel Massey, Black Jack, Colton Yoder, and Muhammad. And today, the show is brought to you by Third Love and Experian, but we'll tell you more about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Four items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Ooh, I like it. It's kind of like Price is Right style.
It is. Come on
Never
down.
It
was Wonderwall, by the way. Man, Mondays are tough for me.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, the news.
More coffee for Fran next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got some.
First up. We had mentioned this, and now I'm going to give you all of the details. Streamer raises almost $1 million for charity in just 4 hours.
Whoa.
So this write-up comes from Luke Plunkett over at Kotaku. Guardian Con, which began a few years back as a small Destiny Con and has since grown into an all-weekend show held in July in Orlando, also runs a week-long charity stream, which has just raised over $3 million for a children's hospital in Memphis. As Forbes reports, the stream operated in four-hour blocks with streamers, teams, and even some companies taking part. Bungie, for example, raised $400,000 in their 4 hours, but the big bucks really came in during Ben Dr. Lupo's turned during playing Fortnite when over $920,000 was donated. The money came from sources as varied as Fortnite streamer Ninja to State Farm Insurance, and all goes directly to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Viewers were encouraged to donate with stretch goals built into each stream. Bungie, for example, showed off some of Destiny 2's new weapons, while Lupo played with some self-imposed handicaps like not being able to build in Fortnite. Guardian Con's charity stream hoped to raise $3 million, but at the end, they tallied $3,721,097. So,
awesome,
congratulations to Dr. Lupo and everybody. Of course, Fran and I both participated in the Guardian Con stream.
Yeah. Yeah. How much did you raise?
We raised over $9,000.
Yeah. That's amazing. Any amount is amazing, honestly. Like, anyone out there contributing to the cause, like, you can actually even still contribute to it, I believe. There's like a link you can do your own charity stream, obviously, and continue to donate to St. Jude.
But how much did you raise?
I was on Destiny Community Podcast, which really, I was like, I'm the new guy on there. So they already do amazing job every year, but we did over 70,000. One contribution, I was telling Andrea, was over was $25,000. So that's, you get some of these really amazing supporters. That
absolutely.
Really,
and like they said here, you know, in Dr. Lupo's stream, having a partner like State Farm Insurance come in and be able to make a big dollar donation is really huge. Obviously, Ninja has done a lot of charitable fundraising in his time as well. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Lupo is known for his fantastic charity fundraising efforts.
Oh, he's crushing it. They had to put him last. At the stream schedule. Yeah, because before, I think it was, I don't know if it was a couple years ago now, he went before some people. And so when you have to follow that act up, it's just a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So they know now to end with Dr. Lupo, and rightly so, nearly reaching his $1 million goal. And I have no doubt that he will next year.
So. Yeah. So there was a lot of fun to be had by all. If you guys want to catch any of those archives, because lots of shenanigans were had during these blocks, you can go to twitch.tv/GuardianCon. You can see all the video archives there.
Yeah. I sang Old Town Road to open up our stream.
Oh,
I'm sure everybody's seen it. And also, out of nowhere, I was like, all right, I tell you what, for 500, I will. I had like my slight beard going, and I said, I'll shave my mustache on stream. So I like buzzed a mustache on stream. It turned into a Fu Manchu. So a lot of fun. Also, should note, I will be at Guardian Con on July 5th and 6th in Orlando, Florida. So if you're out there, in fact, I might even be there a few days early in Orlando. So if you're around, hit me up on Twitter at Fran Mirabella, and would love to see y'all out there.
You could do an FM3 underscore meetup, Fran.
They call it FranCon, as if that'll ever happen. But I would love to see people there. That is what Guardian Con is all about. If you guys don't know, more than anything, it's just walking around, talking to people. And you all know this by now as best friends, like walk up and say hello to anyone that you recognize, because it's always flattering. It's always awesome. And we want to talk to everybody.
But don't touch
and vice versa.
They let you.
No touching, though, like Kevin.
Unless they let you.
He had some serious red flags this morning.
What do you mean?
I can't even tell you about.
What? You tried to fight me.
We're not discussing that. We're moving on to the next story in the Roper Report.
And I wasn't scared.
Which is Sony patents target-reduced load times. So this write-up comes from Matt Persla over at IGN. Fran, you pulled this one. Would you like to read it?
Absolutely. I would love to. Sony, we know with the PlayStation 5, has already been touting faster load times, getting in on that SSD and newer SSD technology in the whole pipeline and setup. But to take it a step further, it seems, now we don't know if this is necessarily for PS5, but you can assume it is. Again, Matt Perzo at IGN, the story goes like this. Sony has patented a new technology that will help remove loading screens from games that use it. The patent is titled System and Method for Dynamically Loading Game Software for Smooth Gameplay. It almost sounds like a Japanese drink or something that you could buy. You know, they have these really long descriptions.
Didn't think about it that way.
It's like a coffee drink. Anyway, it describes a technology that loads in data in advance in order to prevent load screens. Man, why didn't we think about this before this patent? Sorry, I'm in a weird mood today. The patent explains that the system can monitor the player's character and use this information to load in new areas in preparation as the player approaches them. Quote, a load boundary associated with a game environment is identified. A position of a character in the game environment is then monitored. Instructions corresponding to another game environment are loaded into the memory when the character crosses the load boundary such that gameplay is not interrupted. So yeah, as the story goes, effectively this means if the game detects that you're approaching this boundary of the environment, it is just loaded in. So anyway, we know load times are well, we don't know, but seemingly this could be the biggest differentiator of why to put a console in your living room as we're moving to a cloud and, you know, things like Stadia and xCloud and whatever Sony's working on. But what do you think of this, Andrea? Does this excite you at all?
Absolutely. I think what's really the most exciting about the upcoming generation is this current generation we're in is moved a lot in the right direction to having some form of parity in hardware between PC and console. Obviously, PC, the clear superior platform when we're talking about technical prowess, right? And so I think this next generation is going to close that gap even a little bit more. I still think we have maybe one or two more generations to go until they're the same. Because when we're talking about a cloud-only platform, then really your hardware doesn't matter, right? That's Stadia's whole pitch is like, you play Stadia on your PC, play it on your mobile phone, it's going to play the same.
Still depends on what's in the cloud, though, right? How expensive are your servers that you're able to duplicate for 200 million people?
But that's not that cost isn't on the consumer, that cost is on the platform maker, right?
I agree with you. We're a generation or two from things getting closer, but we never know. Like, hopefully the cloud's not so, like, in other words, let's say you're playing on a $500 system in the cloud. I can still go out and buy a $2,000 PC that'll look better, potentially. That's, you know what I mean?
Well, obviously the quality of your screen is always going to dictate the visual experience, whether you're playing on a smartphone or on a 30-inch monitor on your PC or a 75-inch 4K television in your living room, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so that, of course, is always going to play a factor into the gaming experience. But I'm talking purely about performance and how the game runs.
Oh, yeah,
And so that's, to me, was why I think these stories about what PS5 is doing are really interesting, because we've seen that this generation, Xbox One X, was, you know, dubbed the more powerful console than PS4 Pro. And I think that that's obvious when you compare them side by side. Mm-hmm. However, we're getting conflicting reports from developers who probably shouldn't be talking about it at all, about the difference between Xbox Scarlett and PS5. Now, until we get it into our own hands and get to do tests for ourselves, you know, it's just speculation at this time. Mm-hmm. However, I think this is exciting. I would love to see load times reduced. And as you had mentioned, you know, talking about making something the least path of resistance or the most convenient way to play games when you have somebody like Stadia or even xCloud coming in to say, you don't need that box in your living room anymore. Yeah. And for PlayStation to say, this is why you need that box. I think that for me as a gamer, and I've continued to say and will continue to say that I don't think streaming is ready for the mass majority of gamers around the world. I think this is super exciting for people who have invested in the PlayStation ecosystem.
Yep. Yeah. I just wanted to say two things on it. And one is that I brought it up last time we were talking SSDs with PS5s. It kind of is ironic. It takes me back to the 90s when Nintendo made the choice. Partially was they wanted to sell cartridges, but partially they were right. They were like, they don't want load times to be an issue. And it was a huge difference between CD-ROM and cartridges. And so that's why we didn't have huge cutscenes on N64. But you did have experiences like Mario 64 where you jump through a painting and, man, very quickly you're on the other side of that. And so there's some irony to that. We're still chasing it 20 years later. And so it actually excites me thinking about, you know, even just the initial load time, which has been upwards of 90 seconds or 2 minutes for even big games out there. Reducing that, hopefully, but also once you're in the game, making it just smooth, immersive, and not having to like worry about, yeah, things like transition rooms and the door that they put in front of you. It'll be really interesting to see where that goes. But on that note, I would also bring up how are they going to get parity between that and the cloud and like make sure everything works? Meaning from a game design perspective, they're still designing for stuff in the cloud now. They're designing for, who knows, your Xbox One version, and we'll see where that goes. I guess that was most of it. Oh, no. The other thing I was going to mention was just that this excites me because I'm very much still excited about the living room experience, the at-home experience, because fidelity is super important. And I hope we talk about it on this week's Gamescast. But I played, you know, Stadia at E3, and like I was really impressed with how well it was working. But fidelity-wise, I keep saying I think people are going to be surprised, and I'm all about it for these reasons. Super fast, high fidelity, 4K, whatever. That is going to be the differentiator of you know, what's going on between the cloud and in your living room, I think, and what hopefully will make it worth $400 or $500.
I'm definitely interested to hear what you and Greg have to say about it. I know he got hands-on with it at E3 as well. And I'm glad to hear that you both were impressed, because I would hope that Google would make sure to show it in its best light I have always maintained my skepticism because, of course, Google's going to show Stadia in its best light to press during its flagship tech demo at the, you know, flagship consumer electronics event of the year. However, once it launches, is really going to be the true test to
how
see
does it perform?
How does it work in all of these other different scenarios when you're in a hotel, when you're in an airport, when you're in your car, when you're at home and there's an internet outage and you have to tether to another device or all of these other like X factors.
A million
right?
people are trying to encode their video frames to get them back to their hotel rooms, you know?
Exactly, but when you plug in PS5, those load times are going to be consistent no matter where you plug it in.
Exactly. So,
that's like the difference here, right?
I can't wait for you to try it out. It's definitely impressive, but the fidelity factor, meaning watching compressed video as your gameplay, I think is going to be interesting. And you'd be surprised it wasn't showing Stadia in its best light because it wasn't 4K and it wasn't HDR yet. And I think that higher bit rate is the one that frankly, that is the best looking thing that we need to see. We haven't seen it. They actually showed you the more common experience, 1080p. So I was a little surprised they did that as well. It was, you know, a bit pixelated.
Probably to maintain the quality of the build would be my guess.
I think that as well. So, anyway.
All right. Moving on to the next story. Speaking of Bungie and Destiny, as we've been talking about them a lot over the last couple of days, Bungie has postponed Destiny 2 fixes to, quote, preserve work-life balance of the team. So this write-up comes from Vicky Blake over at Eurogamer. Bungie has pushed back plans to nerf Destiny 2's overpowered Lord of Wolves shotgun in order to preserve work-life balance for the development team. In an attempt to address prior balancing issues, a tweak to the Lord of Wolves has instead inadvertently made it deadly in competitive PvP multiplayer instead. Acknowledging the issue in a recent Bungie update, creative director Lou Smith admitted the most recent changes to the Lord of Wolves created a monster, and the team is looking to reduce the damage resistance later this year. Right now, however, the issue didn't rise up to meet the bar of this is broken enough to turn it off in all activities. Sometimes Destiny is going to have goofy outliers or periods of time where something is OP, like wolves howling right now in Iron Banner on PC, Smith said. We don't want these periods to last too long, post-Forsaken launch Voidlux, but they can be memorable moments. I think we all remember the weekend of laser tag and PvP. Internally, we had a bunch of spirited debate this weekend around whether or not we should just prevent players from equipping Lord of Wolves throughout the game. This is a blunt tool, and basically banning an item from being equipped isn't something we take lightly. As reported by Polygon, Smith said in a GuardianCon 2019 charity stream that instead the studio has opted to fold the fix into its upcoming schedule in order to avoid developers having to put in super long hours to fix it now. Quote, we're having the conversation about is it worth doing that or is it better to preserve the work-life balance and ship it later in July, Smith said. To ask a team to do that back-to-back, full disclosure, is not a thing we want to do. We try to be really careful about stuff like that. End quote. In other Destiny news, we found out last week that Destiny 2 Google Stadia players will only be able to play with other Stadia players at launch, which of course was covered last week.
That's a good point of clarification.
But I think it's great to hear this. I think this is another step in the right direction for Bungie leaving Activision, right? Because potentially their publisher may have put pressure on them to address community concerns, whereas they, being their own boss now, can say, yo, we do what we want.
That's the way to do it. Yeah, there's two stories here, and the main one, the one you're talking about, is preserving work-life balance. This is a commentary that is happening. It's been happening for decades, really, but it feels like it's coming up more and more often these days. There's talk of unionizing even, et cetera. And recently, Epic Games faced pressure on this due to some reports that it was like grueling. But as it turns out, they actually just said our office will be closed from now until July 8th for a summer break while we recharge our batteries. So they're taking like a summer solstice.
They do that all the time.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, maybe they do it anyway. And
it's
so
it's just being publicized now,
which is good because like, that's the thing is people assume the worst. Now, not to say that it isn't necessarily still grueling to work on the Fortnite team.
Of course it is.
They said, you know, the report was comparing Apex development and it's kind of slower to like all the stuff Fortnite's doing and it's apples and oranges there. But, you know, I believe, I don't know if it was Vince or someone at the team over at Respawn made the point of like, look, we're not going to push ourselves on a schedule like that. It's too much for
Vince our team. Vince did say that at E3, I believe.
Yeah. And so anyway, if Epic is hopefully improving, that'd be great. But anyway, as it pertains to Bungie, I think it is overall the right call. I've played Destiny 2 with Lord of Wolves. It's definitely vexing and it's annoying like any overpowered weapon in the Crucible. But I think people get tired of it after a while. Now, I'm not saying that it's like this for everybody. Sometimes you hop in and you're going to get smashed by this weapon over and over and over again. And that is the type of experience that you're like, ugh, I'm trying to enjoy the game
right now. It's a shotgun. Don't get close. I was running Iron Banner with the What's Good Guardians last night, and we went on a 12-game win streak, Fran. We won 12 games in a row. That's never happened to me before.
That's amazing. You got that streak.
So excited.
Hunt the Wolves.
That triple valor? Yes.
Cut their momentum. Yeah, keep pushing. Did you know the voice of Lord Saladin, who runs Banner, is Reaper in Overwatch?
Did not know.
Yeah. And there's actually a line in Destiny 2 when you go on a, God, it's like a 25 streak or something. And he's like, die, die, die. Sorry, I've been playing too much Iron Banner. And he goes out this, he keeps talking for like another like 60 seconds about being, it almost sounds like he's a roommate with Shax. And he's like, Shax, can you get me any water? Anyway, so Lord of Wolves is a shotgun, but it also has that, you know, release the wolves burst mode, and it actually has a lot of range. And that is what is the contention here, is you can pretty much, you can map people reasonably well with it if your aim is good. And anyway, I think it's the right call. I was going to say, because yes, I don't want to hear that the team is burnt out as we're coming up on Shadowkeep. We're introducing other problems, and there's a huge laundry list of other things that we ask for as the community. And like, that's the thing, as a developer, you have a roadmap of products, and there's a whole team of people really that are like, okay, move to do this instead. How long is this going to take? How long is, you know, it going to be till we finish this so we can do the next thing, right? The product team that organizes all this stuff. And this might just get in the way of other stuff, but it also might burn the team out. And so I don't know. I'm a little reserved, but like, I can live with it. I'd rather that than them, like Luke said, pulling the entire weapon out of the game. Like, is it that bad? Like, hopefully the community just, like, can you back off using it all the time? Like, it's kind of toxic to do that. Like, I used it for a little bit to test it out, and then like, that's that. Or if I need solar kills, but other than that. So happy to see that they're doing it. I play too much Destiny. I could keep going on this, as Andrea
we
knows.
Both could keep going. I played Destiny all weekend. But let's talk about another game I'm excited to dump a bunch of hours into. Harry Potter Wizards Unite generates $300,000 in 24 hours. You told me how to pronounce his name properly.
Maku.
Eddie McCoo over at GameSpot writes, Harry Potter Wizards Unite appears to be another big success for developer Niantic Labs. According to data from research company Sensor Tower, the free-to-play mobile game pulled in $300,000 combined from Apple iOS and Google Play mobile platforms during its first 24 hours of availability. And that number only counts revenue in the United States and the United Kingdom. According to the report, Wizards Unite also reached 400,000 installs after its first day. Wizards Unite is nowhere near as popular or profitable as Niantic's previous least Pokemon Go. That title generated around $2 million in revenue on its first day, according to Sensor Tower. But Wizards Unite is currently featured in the iOS App Store's games page front and center, which is surely helping its visibility and, in turn, profitability. Of course, the game is also based on one of the world's most popular media franchises, Harry Potter, and its free-to-play model gives low barrier to entry. It'll be interesting to see if Wizards Unite can succeed in delivering new content regularly to keep players interested and engaged and spending money on the game.
Yeah, it definitely became a sensation, you know, obviously coming on using the model of Pokemon Go, but just applying it to, you know, Harry Potter was probably a pretty smart move. I installed it, though, by the way, and there was so much like
tutorials.
Yes, I'm going to call it like archaic game design of just like, hey, here's a bunch of logos and opening scene things before the start menu. Now put your name in. Now put another name in. And anyway, I barely played it is my point. Did you get to play any of it?
I did.
You did? Yes. What do you think of it? I did like one spell. I was like, oh, this seems kind of fun.
I'm with you that the onboarding, but any mobile game onboarding takes like a little bit of patience.
God forbid you just let me open it up and cast a spell.
Right.
And then you can teach me stuff later. Like,
but I mean, they have to make sure that people who have no gaming experience aren't completely lost when they open it, right?
They can't figure it out. No, I know
but
what you're saying.
That's what mobile games are great at. Mobile games are bridging the gap between people who are really expert players in other types of video games and people who've never played a video game before, but maybe have only seen the Harry Potter movies or only read the Harry Potter books. Yeah. But then go, oh my gosh, there's a Harry Potter video game. Let me try it on my phone. I think that it's a really cool setup because obviously Niantic has a lot of learnings from everything they did with Pokemon Go. And so they didn't have nearly as rough of a launch with the Wizards Unite as they did with Pokemon Go, if you guys remember. That game had quite a few issues at launch. Mm-hmm. Yes, what I love about it is that it has that look and feel of Pokemon Go when you're out in the world with the map overlay, of course, from Ingress. And then it's just got all those little like tidbits that are Harry Potter-esque. And I love that, you know, there's these big towers and there's like castles in the distance. And the way that the spells work, I think it's just so much more engaging than Pokemon Go. From the get-go.
It's more than just tossing the ball,
it's more than just flinging the Pokeball, right? And obviously, I know that there's a little bit of strategy in flinging the Pokeball, but having to trace the spells and having some lore behind all of these, the spells and the things that you're capturing, I think really kind of hit me as a Harry Potter fan.
So for those of us who only got barely past the tutorial or haven't played at all, what do you do? Do you walk around the streets and then like you encounter an enemy and then you choose a spell and how, like, how does it work? Like,
well, from what I've played so far, and I haven't played very much, the spell is like auto chosen for you. There might be something later down the line that allows you to dictate which spell you choose.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, can I just cast whatever spell?
Not.
Barrett. Yeah. You've been playing?
On the shock, Mike. Barrett, everybody.
So,
wait.
Hold on, Kevin's getting
in. We got audio.
Okay.
I wasn't going to play this game. Because I'm not I did not like Pokemon Go. Like Alyssa tried to make me play it, and I never played it. But then she was really doubling down on like, I need to go do something like with people. I need to make you download this so you can play. So in the last 2 days, I've gotten up to level 10 already.
Nice. Wow.
And so yeah, yeah, it's just like an automated like
they choose the spell for you.
So yeah, there's nothing like really.
What is the skill of doing the spell though? Because you just trace it on screen.
Yeah, you trace it in like a. Depending on like how fast you trace it and how well you trace the spell, it'll like kind of dictate like, oh, you performed the spell like good or great or masterful and stuff.
Okay,
and
so if you're
up your
you
chances
have to do it
actually,
fast and accurate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll up your chances of actually like collecting the item that you're trying to get in the that encounter. So
cool. All right.
I just really love the whole process of choosing my wand. Like, did all of this research and all the different kinds of wood that you can pick for, because you can customize your wand. And then, like, what people don't realize is that like how you customize your wand will affect the type of spells you can cast.
Oh, right? Interesting. I haven't really looked into it. I just took my. I looked up. I went on to Pottermore and looked up whatever wand I got from there, just chose it from that. So that was cool.
Nice.
Do you remember what your name is in the game?
In the game?
Yeah. Did you just
I'm pretty sure I just went with Andrea Renee.
Oh, what about you?
Yeah, I just went with
I might have gone with
name.
My gamer tag, which I can give you.
Yeah,
afterwards.
My like in-game I went with FM3.
No underscore?
But I did, I'll have to
come. Unified.
See, I can't even just load up the game.
We can look at it. We can look at it afterwards. But just to like, thank you, Barrett, for that mini report.
Thank you.
But if you guys want to play, let me know. I'm down to go walk around and play with you guys.
I did want to add a point of reference is that, so this made
what? Wait, is that here?
I guess so, yeah. There's like a giant,
I bet you it's downstairs in the comic book shop.
Oh, yeah, the comic book shop has like maybe a huge tower here. Anyway, I was going to say point of reference. So what? This made $300,000 in the first 24 hours, as far as we knew. Pokemon Go made something like $795 million in 2018, I think.
Yes, but this says $2 million in its first day. So 2 million to 400.
Right. Yeah, that was the same day. I was just saying on the path, let's see how far it goes. But in a year, Pokemon Go made something like 795 million. Although a game like Fortnite made last year upwards of $3 billion. So you know, we'll see where Harry Potter goes. But $300,000 is no slouch.
Exactly.
So, nice job, Pottermore.
Well, Fran. We're going to have to wait and see just how well Harry Potter Wizards Unite does at the end of 2019. But it's so far away. If we wanted to know something a little bit more immediate, like what came to the Mom and Grab digital shops today, where would we go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Show Games Daily. Show hosts each and every weekday. Man, I try to ad-lib this sometimes.
You can just read it, Fred.
I hate reading it, though. We have to say it every week, and I'm like, why don't I know it by now?
Because
we
know,
read
Fred.
It every week.
I don't know.
Anyway, you know where to find it. Right here. All right, what is out today, Andrea?
Out today, Heavy Rain is finally available on PC. So if you missed it back in its PlayStation days, you can play it on PC now. Azurin Tales Trials is out on Switch. Devil May Cry is out on Switch, which I did not realize was coming to Switch. Horusco Reference is out on Mac and PC. And All Would Cry, Beware, What the heck is that? What? As on PC and Mac, Battlefleet Gothica Armada 2, Serve the Dark Gods, the Massive Chaos Campaign expansion is available today. And it's time to soak up some rays during Fortnite's 14 days of summer. Each day, players can drop into Fortnite for something new. In Battle Royale, a new item will be unvaulted each day for 24 hours. There will be a new LTM featured each day in each daily challenge and free rewards, new outfits, and more in the item shop. Players can also jump into Creative each day for a new featured island. And in Save the World, players can complete a new quest every day to help home base host the hottest summer party around and score some summer freebies in the store. Players can complete quests to earn heaps of summer tickets. Completing all 14 will unlock a new explosive weapon. Mm-hmm. New dates. Today, the arcade crew of Dark Devotion released the launch date of the upcoming Contra-esque platformer Blazing Chrome. It's going to be coming to PC, Xbox One, PS4, and NSX. What's that? Am I having a brain fart here?
I know that as well.
On July 11th.
What is NSX, everybody? Tell us and you're wrong. Andrew and I are the same. We're like, we should know. I don't know. I only see VMware NSX, which maybe not it.
No, yeah.
Tell us
don't
in the...
Know.
I don't know.
Don't know.
You know, GameCube was GCN and NGC, depending on which, if you're in Japan or over here. So NGC, GCN, got very confusing.
Inaccurate.
That's not what it,
it
is. That's not what it is.
I don't have a deal of the day, a deal of the day. Fran, you're rubbing off on me now. What the heck, man?
Buy a guy a drink first, all right?
I was crushing it today so far.
I know. I got us in a very loosey-goosey kind of mood here, I think. So.
There is a pretty impressive sale happening on the PlayStation Store. A bunch of games are super cheap, if you're interested. And apparently, according to our friend Wario64, you can get the Steam version of Monster Hunter World for just $31.68.
Yes. And if you're chasing the Cyberpunk 2077 Collector's Edition for PS4 is back in stock, according to IGN. And it's 17% off Cyberpunk 2077.
Though.
Yeah, $249 to pre-order the Cyberpunk 2077 Collector's Edition for PS4. Holy cow, it comes with so much stuff, except that sweet jacket we got at E3. Did you happen to nab one or no?
Of course nice. I got one.
That's like Tim's favorite thing now. We have a reversible vinyl samurai jacket. It's like yellow reversed and black and sort of yellow. And we got it by watching the demo. That was a really cool gift.
It was indeed. All right, let's move on to reader mail. And today it's brought to you by Third Love. Let's get you a better bra, people. Jen, Gia, and more of the kind of honeys love the Third Love bra, and you will too. Third Love uses data points generated by millions of women who have taken their Fit Finder quiz to design bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit and premium feel. Third Love offers more than 70 sizes, including their signature half cup sizes. You can skip the trip and find your fit with Third Love's online Fit Finder. Order and try on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. Every customer has 60 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. And if you don't love it, return it, and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Third Love's team of expert fit stylists are dedicated to helping you find your perfect fit, and fit stylists are available every day to help via text, chat, or phone, and returns and exchanges are free and easy. This is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own, with straps that won't slip and tagless labels, so no itching. Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/games for 15% off today. Their lounge bra is super comfortable. It's great for summer when you're sitting around playing video games and it's too hot to put a shirt on. Just throw the lounge bra on. There you go. Next up, Experian. You know, the better your credit score, the easier it is to get the stuff you want, or less you have to pay. So the question is, why is it so hard to raise your score? Now it won't be, thanks to Experian. They've launched Experian Boost, a brand new way to instantly increase your credit scores for free. For the first time ever, paying your utilities and cell phone bill can instantly improve your credit score. Experian Boost, by working you give Experian Boost works by giving you credit for the bills you're already paying through your bank account, like water, gas, electric, cable, and cell phone. A higher credit score can help you establish and get access to credit and preferred rates for the things you want and need in life. Experian is on a mission to help boost America's credit score, which will help millions of people across the country build and get better access to credit. People all across America have already raised their credit scores with Experian Boost, and you should too. It used to take months to see your credit score rise a point or two. With Boost, you can increase your credit scores instantly. Boost is free to use and only available from Experian. Up until now, you've been paying your utility and cell phone bills and not getting any credit for it. But now you can. Greg panicked 2 years ago when he discovered an old credit card was dinging his credit score. It took a while for him to build it back up, and Experian Boost would have been really helpful back then. We can't believe it's taken this long for someone to do this. What are you guys waiting for? Experian Boost can potentially help you establish or increase your access to credit. Boost your FICO score instantly for free. The Boost is only available at Experian.com/KFGames. That's Experian.com/KFGames. Credit scores are important, y'all.
So important.
Get started on that stuff early. Mm-hmm. Use stuff like this. I know some people that just like, I don't want a credit card. I don't trust myself.
Like, I don't care if you don't. And if you want one, you have to have one.
Get one with a low limit, then, and just pay your bills with it. Just basics, because like building credit.
Off,
man.
At the end of the month, every
yeah,
month.
Just exactly. Set it up on auto pay. Just put your gas on it or whatever.
And that's what this is getting at. You're doing a lot of that stuff anyway. And actually, that's what some of this seems to be solving, is like, you don't necessarily have to do that. You can use Experian Boost to figure it out. Anyway, we weren't paid to say that part, but
we weren't.
It's true. It's just
facts. We
just
take your credit very seriously.
Adult facts. Adulting.
Best friends. Yeah. All right, on to reader mail.
The most important question. Should I just read the question, Andrew?
From Joe Beezer. I feel like I should take my glasses off for this. Kevin, I'm going to need a close-up on the one.
On the one. And then we'll read the question.
So let me fix my hair for you, Joe. So he specifically wrote in and says, Andrea, if you could raise your eyebrows into the camera for a second without saying anything, it would make my day. Have a good one regardless. So I'm going to do two. We're going to do the single eyebrow
takes.
And then the double eyebrow.
Andrea, okay. I don't know. This kind of sounds like a
Cam, I'm watching.
I'm hoping you're going to use this to make some kind of funny meme. If you're using it for creepy, nefarious purposes, I'm going to be upset.
Well, good for you. You know what I mean?
Cue her being upset.
Okay, here we go. Single eyebrow. Now double eyebrows. Mm-hmm. I did surprise. Should I do something else? Should I do angry?
Shock.
All very good.
Perfect. Angry. There you go.
Now angry. Give
all right.
Angry.
Well done.
Angry. I don't think I can. Angry, you have to furrow. You can't raise.
Yeah. That was a stupid comment. I'm
right?
Sorry.
We have fun right. Over here at Kinda Funny Games
good
Daily.
Good question, Joe Breezer.
All right. CJ Schumer says, hello, KFGD crew. I was wondering how you all feel about the balance between live service games offering content at launch versus post-launch. Paul Sage, the creative director for Borderlands 3, mentioned in an interview with VentureBeat that while the team wanted to bring their complete vision to the upcoming game, the pressure of a ship date forced them to cut content in certain areas. That being said, Gearbox is still planning for both paid and free DLC to come to Borderlands 3 after its launch this September. Would you rather a game release earlier with the promise for a longer pipeline of post-launch content, or wait longer for a game with more to play up front with less content coming on the back end? It seems like for a developer, the former option could be better given its respective game will have more attention on it over a longer period of time. Thanks, CJ.
For starters, no, I don't want to wait forever if there's like, call it enough. It's hard to quantify this question because we don't know like how much content is being withheld or what it is exactly. I'm going to have to assume that it's not like just a huge amount, but it's something. So yeah, like, you know, what, perfect is the enemy of good or what is it? There's a saying that goes something like that. But, you know, if you're out there trying to perfect the experience, you want to get everything, like a game will never be done. And Borderlands 2 released in September of 2012. Like, you know, I know that there was Handsome Collection and all that stuff, but like, I think we've waited long enough. So I'm all right with it. But I was a little surprised too, that they just like threw the comment out. I was like, yeah, we took some stuff or we couldn't put the stuff in the game, so we'll sell it to you later. I already trust them to give us a pretty beefy experience. That I think that's why a developer like
Gearbox
can. I heard the train outside and it just distracted me. Why a developer like Gearbox can get away with this? Other developers who would say something like this, I think, might get skewered. because if they have, like, let's just say Activision, a Call of Duty team said something like this, I just feel like differently. They'd be like, oh, you know, dare you, you know, and with Borderlands, I feel like we're all like, yeah, but there's going to be a lot in the game. I mean, I have trust in that. We don't know that yet.
I think it really depends on the track record of the developer. Gearbox has done really well with the expansions and post-launch content that they put out for their previous Borderlands game. So I have full faith that they will do well here. But I think what Paul Sage is saying is something that's very common throughout game development. You have to have a ship date. Otherwise, as creatives, you just keep iterating and iterating and iterating and saying, well, what if we add this thing? Or what if we add this thing? You have to cut off the flow at some point and say, hey, why don't we save that for future releases? Personally, I would prefer a smaller experience at launch with more things to come post-launch. Because I think about a game like Dragon Quest XI when it launched last fall, and the development team very specifically said, we don't want to do post-launch content. We want to put everything inside the game when we ship it. And that's a very specific choice. But then that means you're getting a game that has over 100 hours of content in the box, which isn't a bad thing. Obviously, it's a lot of value for people who are very excited about playing that specific franchise. But as somebody who plays a lot of games, I'm like, dang, that turns me off of wanting to play it because that's way too much. I'm never going to be able to finish that game.
Right.
You know, I like to be able to see the end of the tunnel, and then after I complete a game, if they're like, hey, we're going to do another story to help complete that experience, I think that to me is more exciting. Like how with, if you think about Horizon Zero Dawn, I thought that that campaign was really evenly paced, and then they released the Frozen Wilds, which added on to the story, you know, several months later, I think 10 months later. No, not that many months later. 8 months later?
I don't know.
This is the kindoffunny.com/you're-a-wrong-moment, I guess. Not that it really matters, but I think that something like that is more approachable because then I can go, okay, I finished the story and I feel good about finishing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want stuff to be dragged out either. And that's a maybe a good side effect is when you have to like make these decisions, like you're only focused on what's in there and you're polishing up that experience. I mean, again, we don't know where this would have fit in, whether it was a post beating the game experience or whatever. But anyway, it doesn't concern me that much. We do know there's Borderlands 3 Season Pass coming. I don't know if we know if what the price is and how that works. I'm looking at, you know, I've looked at the pages for the pre-order, and it's just like Season Pass is coming, and it includes 4 campaign DLC packs, new stories, missions, and challenges, and it will be all the stuff will be available by a year later, September 2020. I don't know how much more we know than that, but whatever they've decided to push out will be part of that.
If it's 4 story campaign add-ons with new missions and challenges, I would guess it's probably going to be in the $29.99 to $39.99 mark
for
all that stuff, including the cosmetic items. So, but you know, we, as you mentioned, don't know yet.
Yeah, I don't think we know yet. If we do, it'll be in kindoffunny.com/you're-wrong very shortly. So,
all right, which one do you want to go to next here, Fran?
By the way, you can call me Florian Greyback. That was the That was the name I chose for my Harry Potter character.
Oh.
Florian Greyback.
Okay.
Because that's like Harry Potter names. You got to have a little fun with it, Kevin. You know, role play.
I mean, I'm kind of funny, Kevin, so.
Great. Very creative.
Unified branding.
You can just call me Florian.
All right.
Or whatever. Let's see. Which question do we want to go? I say as Florian. I don't know, Andrea. Either one's fine by me. I really don't care.
Okay. So here we go. Michael Gulliver says,
yeah.
Happy Monday to Team Frandria. With companies like Limited Run Games releasing games on physical media for reprint or for the first time, like their most recent Star Wars for Game Boy NES is a particular highlight, what games would you like to see released again in physical edition to ensure it isn't lost in the digital revolution? Thanks. Oh, it says, love both of you guys. Andrew, hope you're feeling better. Love from Buckinghamshire, England. Buckinghamshire.
Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic city name. I wish we had cool city names like that. Actually, we do.
Really, city isn't a cool city name?
I mean, no, it's not.
Or taking everything. So
San Francisco?
San Francisco's okay.
Come on, it's got your name in it.
Nah. There's much cooler United States city names.
Yeah, like
than
that. Tallahassee.
Yeah, I like Tallahassee. See, that's a good one. Really? There's many other ones, like Albuquerque.
Like Fargo?
No,
well,
not like
Fargo is iconic. There's no doubt about it.
Thank you.
Thank you, movies. Anyway, to answer the question, it's funny that like I'm not a collector anymore. I have stuff. I have a couple things that I'm really proud that I have, like an original Famicom, Super Famicom Metroid, Super Metroid. And I also have a spice-colored GameCube that is signed by Anuma, Iwata, and Miyamoto.
Very nice.
That was amazing. And I have a couple, like, I never collect, those are more collector items. But I guess my point is, like, physical stuff, I don't want it anymore. Now, I do understand why people want to make sure that when all the servers shut down, when the pre-apocalypse hits, that you have your game so you can play them in your bunker. So anyway, under that guise.
But the question is specifically to ensure it isn't lost in the digital
revolution.
That's
what I was just trying to illustrate, was that whatever, the digital revolution works fine, but I guess if this pre-apocalypse comes and you're in your bunker with power and you're playing something and you're like, man, I'm really glad I have this. Oh boy, there'd be a lot of games, I think, that I'd want to make sure that I had. But this is more about re-release, so I'm going to stick with, I'd love... Well, wait, let me ask this, Andrea.
Mm-hmm.
When they say a reprint, it has to be, it's like not a release on a new platform, right? You have to have the old platform and a reprint for it. Is that the idea?
I would imagine if it's a reprint, it's for new platforms so that you don't necessarily need the old technology to be able to read it.
See, this was like, he's talking about, Game Boy cartridges and NES cartridges. And like, it means you have to have a working old console as well.
I guess that's true because the Star Wars.
They're really cool.
The Star Wars thing that he's talking about is on one of its original consoles. So.
Yeah. No, and that is it. It's these really cool, either never released before or, reprints with like really cool art that comes with them and stuff like that. So I'm just going to put Super Metroid out there again. I'd love a re-release of it.
That's a great one.
So
it looks like they're also putting it on PS4 though.
And that was the point I was trying to make is, man, I know it doesn't make any sense, but I would just love like a Blu-ray, Metroid Prime, for PlayStation 4 or whatever. And, That I just want like a sweet collector's edition for Metroid Prime. I'm a big Metroid fan, so those are the two I'm going with. Is there anything in that vein? Oh, by the way, a new new art and like really make it worthwhile.
Yeah, because you saw this one for Star Wars Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, so it says only 7,500 copies available worldwide, region free. That's pretty cool. It's so hard to pick because there's so many great classic games. If I'm just thinking about my personal history with games and some of the classic games that I would love to have. Like on current platforms, I think like Myst and how much time I spent with that game on PC.
Yeah, because it would almost have to be a reprint because like it came on, I think, both floppy and eventually CD. But now you'd want it on Blu-ray or something like that, I guess.
And I think you can get it on GOG right now, right?
Probably. See, that's the dead.
GOG has a lot of weird.
Myst is
old
a good
stuff.
One. Yeah. I like that.
I'd say something like Myst. I also think about
King's Quest.
I was never into King's Quest.
I like King's Quest.
No, it was never one of my things. Go ahead.
I was going to say, is there anything maybe that you remember that like didn't sell enough copies and you missed buying it at the time? I mean, I think that's also what this addresses is sometimes something didn't like sell a lot or whatever and you might want to reprint. Like there was, Dabutsu no Bansho or... Cubivore on GameCube was this cube that ate other cubes. It was a really weird game, but there's stuff like that probably didn't see like many copies released. Or hey, I might buy Superman 64 reprint on the N64 just because like you want that hot mess. Like you can't get it. It's very hard to get. So stuff like that maybe.
Yeah, or even like you could take a game like GoldenEye too, right?
Ooh, yeah, there you go.
Because I feel like if you look at games that were very pivotal or innovative or important to the overall like trajectory of the video games industry, I think those games are important because clearly we can't save all the games. Not all the games are worth saving, quite frankly. But like, I would love to play some Aladdin from Super Nintendo.
Oh yeah,
relive my memories in the Cave of Wonders. I could go for that.
A lot of this stuff you can get out there, but like,
yeah, I mean, there's ROMs for virtually anything.
ROMs,
right?
Yes, but meaning physical copies,
like reprints. Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, you can get used GoldenEye like on eBay, I'm sure, very easily. If not, then I should maybe.
No, but like, I want
a freshie. Okay. That's fair.
A freshie, you know?
Not
one of these used copies that's been in and out of that system.
Okay.
What if they didn't eject it properly, Fran?
That's true. You think that about the ejection process?
I mean...
You could ruin your cartridges if you don't eject properly, okay? If you just rip it out, you can't do that.
You can lose your save. You're not going to ruin the cartridge. It's fine.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Did you know? Wait, while we're on the topic.
Moving on.
Do you know if you, I don't know if you search for this still on Google, but if you search, here, I'm going to try NES Blow cartridge. I used to be one of the top results in images because BuzzFeed. Yeah, I'm the on the third image.
Oh, Kevin, now you have to search NES this so everybody can see it.
Blow. Well, make sure there's nothing. Yeah, that's a safe
search.
Don't
worry about it. I got it.
But yeah, I'm the third result because I did a tutorial. And I specifically, so I did a tutorial on cleaning your cartridges for IGN Insider at the time. And I was like, use, you know, alcohol. And
that's
cotton
him
swabs,
right there.
There I am. That's Frank. I took this photo. I took it and staged it specifically.
It looks like you're kissing it.
No, I'm blowing it in a cup. But I had them take the photo to demonstrate what not to do. And BuzzFeed goes and uses the image to say, don't do this. And I was like, that's what I was saying. But they sort of like got people thinking that that's what I was doing.
I was looking at this and I was like, no, this is wrong. You shouldn't do it like this.
Do you like my boy band highlights in this, by the way? It's like slightly red.
Oh, I can't really tell because you have that light on top. But
it actually is. It's like slight little frosted tips. Kind of scary. Anyway, glad I brought that up. It's that kind of Monday.
Eduardo Game Go writes in and says, hi, Frandria. Hope you're having a great Monday. It was great meeting you two at E3. I recently saw Raising Kratos, and it was very interesting to see the developer side of games creation and marketing and the sacrifices and hard work it took to make a masterpiece. Fantastic documentary, by the way, if you guys haven't seen it. My question, what game would you love to see a documentary on and why? I would choose either Metal Gear Solid 5 to learn the full details about the Kojima-Konami ordeal, or Days Gone to see how a studio and its devs deal with a game that doesn't get 9s and 10s like God of War did. I think it'd be interesting and would do a lot to show viewers why sometimes games fail to be perfect, though still enjoyable. Keep up the great hosting, Eddie.
I mean, there's so much to choose from. Do you want to go first on this one? I thought Metal Gear was sort of the obvious, really smart one, especially 5.
I mean,
5.
Not for me, because I'm not a Metal Gear person. And when I think about, I mean, I do appreciate the conversation that you and Tim had last Friday about how you
how do we
to
get
see more
documentarian stuff. Like, yeah, Danny and Noclip just did another one today on Supergiant and Hades. And like, again, that's like if he wasn't able to set that up and do them, you know, we might have never seen that. And frankly, he probably was looking at somebody else and like, you got to choose. So the more of that, the better. But anyway, if you could.
It's tough because in one hand, I'm like, I really want to see a feel good story about a studio that had a lot of challenges, but then really knocked it out of the park at launch. But then on the other hand, I'm like, ooh, there's some good controversies that would be interesting to hear some like backstory about everything that happened and kind of what went wrong.
Yeah, and by the way, this assumes that it's a tell-all, right? Because Raising Kratos was produced by them and Sony, right? I mean, ultimately. So it's approved. So in other words, like, sure, they put in some, like, honesty in there, and I haven't watched it yet, only because, like, I'm at the very... It's sad. I'm at the very end of God of War, and I just can't bring myself to finish it because I want this armor
set. But
the ending
is so good.
I know. I almost sat down and did it last night, and I started playing Division again. The grind, it gets you. Anyway, what I'm getting at here, right, there's a little approved nature, but we're going to assume for the purpose of this discussion that it's tell-all, that it's you documented everything and we got to see it all. So Anthem, sort of like, I mean, I think that's an obvious recent one that I would have loved to see. Like the meetings about, you know, flying should be in the game or not. And like, there's all kinds of really interesting stuff that apparently happened with Anthem, according to Jason's report. But anything else pop out for you?
I would really love to hear about the history of Fortnite. So I've heard some really good, I don't even know if they're rumors or gossip, but the whole idea of Fortnite, how Fortnite came into existence, and the rumblings that I've been hearing is that essentially Fortnite was originally created to be a demo vehicle for the Unreal Engine 4. And that when they originally had the idea for Fortnite, they built it to show developers this is what the engine is capable of doing and the kinds of things that you can build within the engine. And we're going to show you because we're the ones making the engine. Because if you think about where Fortnite started back in like when the first time they showed it, I believe was 2013. Or maybe it was 2012. No, I think it was 2013. And how dramatically different it is today than when they first showed it off. I would really love to hear from the team at Epic about where the genesis for this project was and the journey that they went on over several years of iterating. Because when I first played it at Judges Week several years ago, it was just Save the World, but it wasn't even called Save the World back then. And the idea of Battle Royale hadn't even really been broached. They had mentioned that they were looking at PvP modes, but the Battle Royale specifically was not mentioned at all. And so I would really love to hear like that journey and how they got there from this thing that was something totally different than what it is today, and like their path to making billions of dollars with it, and they're building their community and really changing a lot of what they do at Epic as a company to accommodate for this massive behemoth that they created.
Yeah, they've talked about it a little bit, I think, and actually, maybe not so coincidentally, I actually was able to do an expert mode with Eric, you know, who's the lead designer on Fortnite, you know, the Battle Royale. And there was an interesting story there of how fast he got thrown into it. And so again, these were only, you know, 8 to 12 minute pieces, but it's a glimpse into what you're talking about. But yeah, I'd love the tell all version of that because it went on for what, 5 or 6 years of development. And then we all know PUBG came out and other stuff. And suddenly, basically what happened is you'll hear they admit, they're like, it was July before the game Battle Royale came out in September. That's when they started Battle Royale for Fortnite, building on this Save the World that you talked about. It's really
wild.
Amazing to hear. So, yeah, there's so many I would want to hear. I'm a big Nintendo fan, so anything with that team, in particular around Ocarina of Time, but also in between Wind Waker and the CG demo that they had for GameCube of the realistic-looking, like, Ganondorf swinging his sword around and the decisions that were made. I always reference that I was maybe one of the few in the press at the time, but they released screenshots that Link's eyes in Wind Waker were a certain color. And I noticed they were different. I asked, I think it was Miyamoto about it. And he was like, oh, that's interesting. We were going to have his eyes change color depending on what was happening in the environments. And like they pulled it out. And anyway, any detail like that, I think is just fascinating. So
indeed. All right, I think that's going to do it for reader mail for today. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to head to... Do we have a squad up today? I didn't see one.
I'll double check while you, if you want to check you're wrong.
Okay, so as we mentioned, if you're watching live at twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we ask you to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. So, checking here. Kebab says, technically, both of you are streaming together right now. Kebabs, you knew what was
that. Wow.
Technicality.
Got us on a technicality.
Got you.
The nanobiologist says, Gary has been advertising doing a live commentary of Book of Eli when it's on Netflix and discussing a draft of the script as well. The current streams are to test to prepare for it and end up being 3+ hour Q&As. Oh, twitch.tv/GaryWitta, everybody, if you want to go check him out.
Bless him, this sweet man.
Oh, this is important. Thank you, Lord of Pwn. Important news to not forget about. Speaking of donation charity streams, Summer Games Done Quick is currently going on this week with donations going to Doctors Without Borders.
Nice.
I believe our friends over at Funhouse did their 24-hour stream yesterday. Maybe just finishing.
Just finished, I think, this morning or something, yeah. I saw him on Twitter. It was like 10 hours to go, and my Twitter feed said 15 hours ago. And I was, okay.
ETH Demon, thank you for putting this in, because I was going to mention it on Gamescast this week, and we will correct it on Gamescast. Cyberpunk is based on a pen and paper RPG, and it's not a brand new IP created by CD Projekt Red.
So it is based on a pen and paper RPG. Okay.
Correct.
Because, yeah, it came up on... Was it Gamescast or something?
We were talking about it on Gamescast
and
E3.
I swore that it did, but the way that you know it was said on the show, and you know how I get...
We specifically said, I don't know. And I think we were all like, I think it's new. So thank you for the correction. Yeah. We will bring this up on Gamescast.
I was remembering
as well.
That I feel like Max Scoville over at IGN did a piece on all of the references because he used to do this thing called Study Hall and then it evolved into something he did at IGN. You should check it out. It was, Believe on Cyberpunk. And he probably brings up this, this you know, source material. What
right.
else?
I'm going down here. Hey, nanobiologist, that isn't breaking news about the EA giving up performance bonuses. We covered that in breaking news last week, Tim and I did, at the end of Thursday's Roper Report.
So we were gonna,
Fran had it in the rundown tonight. I was like, nah, we covered that already.
But see, because I didn't see that full show and it wasn't in the rundown, so I didn't know.
Any of the show I heard somewhere.
I mean, if I'm not on it?
Yeah.
Well.
Andrea watches every show.
Does she?
She's
a beast, though.
I watch like 90% of the shows.
Yeah. She's a beast.
Some weeks I can't get to them all.
We can agree that Andrew better than Fran. I mean,
yeah, but you know, then you got to sit through like a producer arguing with a host, and then it like it goes on and on and.
Antonio Batista says NSX equals Nintendo Switch. Who abbreviates Nintendo Switch
that's
to NSX?
That's right. See, I knew that's I think why NGC popped in my head because I think they use it on you know vendor sites and stuff like NSX. But anyway, nobody says that.
Nanobiologist says, deal of the day, Warhammer Vermintide 2 Deluxe Edition. It's $40 on Amazon and Best Buy for PS4 and Xbox One. Thanks, Wario64.
That's
again,
a good-looking game, too, man.
Please go to Wario64, at Wario64 on Twitter. He frequently uses affiliate links. We want to make sure he gets credit for putting these deals out there. He's a friend of the show, so make sure to give him credit where credit is due.
Anything else?
Let's see here. What is this? Alia D. Fop says Cyberpunk 2077 pre-order on Amazon for $49.99. Really? That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it is.
It's $10
off. $10 off.
Thank you, Kebabs. The Frozen Wilds came out 10 months after the base game in November. So I was correct the first time. But then Lord of Pounce says came out November 7th, a little over 8 months after the game came out.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Kebabs, it's pronounced Buckinghamshire. Buckinghamshire.
Is it really?
That's what he says.
That sounds wrong.
That sounds wrong.
Kebabs is from like Australia or, right? You're not from England. I know you got the accent that's similar, but like, I don't know if we can trust
it.
It's
not the same legal.
And Ted Johnat says Buckinghamshire is a county, not a city.
It's a county. It's a county.
San Mateo County. San Francisco
Why didn't they give
county.
Us their city? Come on.
Not sure.
Give it up. Dox yourself.
Don't dox yourself.
Shear?
Don't dox anybody. No doxing.
Buckinghamshire. All right.
Zaire says, deal of the day, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard Gold Edition, Darksiders 3, and Destiny 2 Forsaken Legendary Collection are all $20 on PS4 and Xbox One at GameStop's online store.
Oh. And if you're wondering, wait, isn't Destiny free?
Not the Forsaken stuff.
No, not the Forsaken stuff. But we don't know how much it's going to cost. So wait, it was $20?
$20.
So, yeah, if you already own the other stuff, it might be worth getting. But my guess is it won't be more than $20 when Shadow Keep's out in September for that pack. It'll probably be less than that, is my guess.
Probably, dude.
Spencer, thank you for the clarification. Just a quick heads up with the limited run game Star Wars stuff. All of their LucasArts games will be reproductions and require original hardware. The only ones that don't follow the rule are Star Wars Bounty Hunter, Racer's Revenge, and Jedi Starfighter. Those PS2 games are specifically the emulated version on PS4. But hey, trophy support. The reason these are PS4 discs and not the original PS2 discs is due to Sony not allowing publishers to print PS2 discs anymore. Fun fact, Sony's factories can still print PS2 games, but just don't have online tools to help publishers submit art for physical PS2 games.
Huh.
Interesting.
Very fascinating. That is a whole other world.
Oh, Kebabs, in case Drew Baca didn't send it in, Epic did a GDC talk about Fortnite's development and its shift to Battle Royale.
Awesome. Be sure to check that as well.
I still want a full documentary. I accidentally moved something. Undo. There we go. It says the nanobiologist Fortnite was actually shown off first at Spike's VGAs back in 2011. Couldn't find the actual date of when it was shown as a tech demo. That was, I believe, 2013 when I saw it behind closed doors at Judges Week. So you wouldn't be able to find a date for that because we didn't talk about it publicly.
Yeah, but they clearly had ideas for it, though, then if it was at the Spike VGAs. But anyway.
Yes.
That game went through a lot of iteration and evolution. Worked out for him.
Yes. hey, nanobiologist, within that article about Patrick Sutherland giving up his $20 million bonus, there is also a paragraph about other EA executives giving up their bonuses. So
yeah, the story we're all referencing, by the way, is that EA execs gave up their bonus due to performance of the company, and that bonus they gave up supposedly went back towards developer bonuses, and there was like $4 or $5 million, I think, that pool became out of the execs. Then there was a story right within there about Patrick Sutherland being offered some $20 million sum
to stay.
They were
tied together,
right? And we actually don't know where and if that went anywhere, right? I think it was speculative that it probably went to
right.
This
no, board. The thought was that he took the money and left.
And
that was
the
assumption,
that wasn't
and
the case.
Then they revealed. Then Andrew Wilson revealed it afterwards as part of the Game Daily.biz deep dive that they did. That In fact, no, he didn't take that $20 million. And in fact, actually, all of the execs put their bonuses back into the company to help fund more game development. So anyway, that's going to do it for us today on Kind of Funny Games Daily. Did somebody update the doc with who's hosting tomorrow?
Is it you? Are you there?
Is it not there?
I think I'm hosting tomorrow. Greg's back.
I think it's Greg and Andrea tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it's your normal Tuesday crew. We hope that you guys will participate and send us in your questions. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to do that. Fran, if people want to keep up with you, where should they go?
I was just about to cue you up and ask you that. If you like me and want to see me on the show, you can also support me at twitch.tv/fm3_. You can head over there, catch me usually evening Pacific time, but fire up that notification, because you never know when I'm going to go live. And then, of course, I'm in the Epic Creator Store as well. It's an easy way to support me for free if you're out there buying games on the store. It's just Fran Mirabella on the store. Andrea, what about you? Where can we support you?
Oh, you know, we're just holding it down at What's Good Games. You guys know where to find us. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Kevin, what can viewers who are watching live on Twitch look forward to seeing immediately after this show?
We have cool friends with some cool people. Mark Ellis.
Cool friends.
Ken Hofsack. Woo! I remembered all that.
We have cool friends. Good job, Kevin. Look at you. You'll be a producer someday.
What?
Wow. I'm just kidding. He produces a screencast. You guys should watch it.
You're doing a great job, Kevin.
All right. That's it for us. It's been our pleasure to serve. Goodbye, everybody.